On this week's Klamath Tribes podcast, I'm speaking with Abby Hall. Joining me also is Elders Klabal Tribal member Romaine Miller. This project, I don't know if we call it a project, but the speaking, public speaking engagements you do around the state, country?
I've just done the state of Oregon, and it started by trying to promote the Senate Bill 13 curriculum, because we had developed this curriculum and done these videos, but it's kind of like you do a great movie, but if you don't promote it, who's going to see it? And so we really wanted to promote the curriculum. And then I did my first talk 2 years ago in this room. And you know, there was probably 75 people here, and it went really well. And then they asked me to do another one.
You're just speaking about the boarding school?
Almost the same talk I give today. Just every time I learn more things, it changes. So like last week, I got a picture of my grandma at Canyonville Bible Academy at the age of 13. So that got added in for today. And so the talk has evolved the more things I learn, the more stories I hear. But it was really a part of just trying to make people aware of that curriculum so that they would start using it. And so like I did it to Deschutes County social studies teachers. I'm giving this same talk to Deschutes County Health Department. And so I've probably given the talk 20 times now.
Over
the course of 2 years.
You mentioned in your presentation today what sparked it. It was the unmarked graves of some children you found out about.
I was naive when I said, yeah, we'll do a boarding school lesson. And I thought I could just go online and Google Klamath Tribes and the Boarding School Experience and find information and write a lesson. And what I found was that history had never been written. And so instead of just gathering the history, I actually had to go out and interview people, record the history, write the history, and then write the lesson. Because boarding school history has been written to an extent, but nothing specific to the Klamath Tribes. And like one of the big undertakings was just finding out which of our members had gone to boarding school. And you know, we did a talk today in front of maybe 25 people, and we have an elder here who 5 of his family members aren't on the list. We had another lady who she saw her grandparents' names on the list and didn't even know they went to boarding school. And so it was the lack of record keeping when it comes to boarding schools. And then when our people returned, they didn't pass this information on. They just didn't talk about the schools. And so when I went to write that lesson, it wasn't just a kind of internet search. It was looking at primary sources, talking to survivors. And it became a lot bigger than I was and a lot weightier than I ever anticipated. Just in my head, I felt it was removed in time. And it's not. It's right there, and the repercussions are in the present. And so I think that was one of the things that kind of really hit hard in doing the research.
And that research began what year?
We revamped the SB 13 committee in like January of 2020 and did the elder interviews in July of 2020. I wrote the letter to tribal council in August of 2020, and then we had the 3 videos come out in exactly a year later, January of 2021.
So it's kind of a new, it coincided with the pandemic. Was that a little bit of, you were locked in and you started thinking about things that?
Well, we had a timeline. We had to get the curriculum done by June 30th of 2020. It was a hard deadline. If we didn't meet the deadline, we lost the funding. And so we actually wrote the curriculum without our biggest component, which was the videos. And the reason we decided to go with the videos is because you can show, anybody can look at a 5-minute video, anybody. And the people that hear the curriculum are only the people that show up to the classroom and the teacher teaches it. And so we made the decision as a committee to take all the money that the Oregon Judicial Department gave us and pay to do 4 educational videos, because we knew those videos could outpace us teaching the lessons. Even if we got the lessons immediately into the schools, the videos can go so much further. And so we spent our money doing videos that represented tribal history from tribal perspective. And far and away, like, I think the boarding school video has well over 5,000 hits, and I've maybe told the story 20 times and talked to 500 people. And so you can see how doing those videos really paid off. But yeah, that was kind of doing it during the pandemic. I can tell you we really struggled with bringing together our greatest cultural resource as our elder people and putting them all in the same space just right after the pandemic. But at the same time, every time we lost an elder, it was like, oh, we just lost the opportunity to get that story. And like one of the elders, what's his name? Parazu.
Buddy
Parazu is in that picture. He attended St. Mary's. He came to be interviewed and he wasn't feeling well, so he had to go home that day, and then he died that fall. And so we were this close to being able to record that history. And it's so important that we record this history, because it'll be lost if we don't. And like you see right now that there is intentional cover-up and denial that St. Mary's was a boarding school, is what history tells us. No, it's not a boarding school. It was, and here we have a picture right in our building of 30 little Indian kids sitting on the steps. That's called erasure. And to be able to record those first count accounts was important. And to do it in a manner where we were respecting the experiences of the elders that did it. That was a big concern of the Senate Bill 13 committee, was we're gonna have these elders come in and, you know, kind of reveal their heart and their soul and what happened. And hopefully it can be a release for them and not just a returning to the dark time in history. But I have to say, out of everything I've ever done in my life, the elder interviews were one of the most emotional, amazing things I've ever been a part of.
How many of you interviewed?
I think we did 21, 2 days, 3 days.
Are there more that you want to talk to?
Oh yeah, because so what we did was we the tribal admin helped us, and we sent 300 letters to the 300 eldest tribal members. And you know, we got, of course, your typical response rate, maybe 20 people responded. And then we did the interviews, and it was like, well, how come you didn't talk to so-and-so? How come you didn't do this? Oh, you did that wrong. So everybody had to tell us, and you really should have talked to so-and-so. And so I would love to be able to do something like this again. And I was watching a tribal council meeting, and I believe Georgie Nelson in the language department has applied for funding to record boarding school survivors. I don't know if she got the grant. That was a couple months ago. But we just hit the tip of the iceberg. Like, our list is so not complete of the people that attended the schools. And we need to get the stories. Like, who was that elder that you just spoke with?
Regina Heath.
Regina Heath.
Yeah. So when you do this presentation, you mentioned 40,000 or so undocumented, or are they undocumented attendees of boarding schools in North America?
They believe that 40,000 died.
That was undocumented deaths.
I don't know if it's undocumented. It may be documented. I can get you that work cited. But what's happening is in the last 2-3 years is they're finding mass unmarked graves. They go out with ground penetrating radar and find these graves. And the majority of them are in Canada. And they just started, I want to say May or June of last year, looking in the United States with ground penetrating radar. But when we did those elder stories, you know, one of the elders said, I saw a kid get pushed down an elevator shaft, and we never saw that kid again. And, you know, there's several elders who said, you know, so-and-so was there one day, and then I never saw him again. And these are from our elders that are telling us this. And so do I think that children went missing that are unaccounted for? Yes. And what their record would say would be like deserter. But they don't know what happened, because I'm sure Smokey's family, when they ran away, it probably just says deserter on their federal record. But do they know if they made it back home? They don't know. They didn't keep accurate records. And so they assumed that between 100 and 150,000 attended the boarding schools and about 40,000 died. And so I don't know if that includes unmarked graves, went missing, deserter, how they came to that number. And I would refer you to Deb Holland's report that just came out in May. It was part one, and it's probably 250-page report.
What report is that?
The Secretary of the Interior did the first in-depth study. It came out in May of 2022 on boarding schools.
Wow, that's coinciding with your initiative.
Yeah, she's probably following me. Well, one of the most shocking, because I can only read a couple pages at the time because I get too fired up. And the last time I was reading it, what I found was they took Native American money out of our trust accounts and used that money to fund the boarding schools. David Truer, an Ojibwe author, words it like this: the theft of Indian land funded the theft of Indian children. So when they took that allotment money and they sold off those allotments to non-natives, they took the money that they made and used it to pay for the boarding schools. And then they took the children. And so it's all connected. And that was one of the things that the report outlined, was this is where the money came from to run the boarding schools. It was our own money that they took.
And they were run mainly by the Catholic Church, did you say?
First Nations schools, residential schools in Canada were run by the Catholic Church. In the United States, they were run by the federal government.
So those pictures of the nuns were from Canada?
Those were from religious schools here in the United States. And so, like, let's say if we look at St. Mary's, per the Boarding School Healing Coalition, that is not a boarding school. Per the Oregon Historical Society, that is not a boarding school. Yet, we know that multiple Native Americans from the Klamath tribes were shipped up there via train and attended that school, and it was run by the Catholic Church. But
it's where Regina is at.
Yeah, he just talked to an elder for 3 hours, told him how terrible this school was, and yet it's not a boarding school. They're not. There was Sacred Heart in Klamath Falls, St. Andrews, Mount Vernon. I've found six, Canyonville Bible Academy, that are not being, and I think that's the thing I'm most upset about, is people know about the federal boarding schools and like, oh, bad federal government, you shouldn't have done that. But nobody's calling out all the religious schools that did the same thing.
When you say religious, we're specifically saying Catholic?
Multiple denominations. The ones that, I would just say the church in plural, the ones that we've found in Oregon, like, I don't know what denomination Canyonville Bible Academy is, but in, like, St. Mary, St. Andrews, those are Catholic.
Mm-hmm. And the more sensitive issues and topics that was mentioned today briefly, though it happened, it seemed quite prevalently, it was the sexual and physical abuse of Indian children at these schools. Have the elders been able to talk about that? It's probably so painful and dark, but I mean, this is it's right up there with the unmarked graves and deaths, right?
Smokey can probably speak to this more. I show a video in my Native Studies class, and it's a three-part video, and the lady in it talks about being repeatedly raped, and I could only watch the video once because she looked too much like my grandma to watch it again. And the First Nations people talk about it more, but their government has apologized and paid reparations. I feel very confident saying that our government is still in an active cover-up. Prior to this in-depth report happening in the last few years, I believe the federal government was still covering it up and literally waiting for their survivors to die so that they don't have to pay reparations. And some people may say, oh, that's a conspiracy theory, but we saw in the Eloise Cobell case that they intentionally destroyed trust documents. They hid them, they lied under oath, and to underestimate what the federal government will do is to your own peril. Native peoples know what the federal government is capable of, and I think they're still covering it up. Maybe not now, maybe not with the what Deb Holland is doing, but the survival stories that I have heard related to sex abuse have been First Nations people out of Canada. And so I haven't done any of the healing circles or talking groups. Maybe you can speak to that more, Smokey.
I would like to comment on how we express the trauma that happened through boarding schools and through other acts of colonization that happened to our Indigenous peoples. I suffered a great deal of trauma in my own personal life. My father was at Carson boarding school. He was murdered at 35 years old, I think he was, maybe 34. And I was very young when it happened, and not really knowing or being capable of processing trauma at that age because my mind wasn't developed to handle that. You look at all of the generational trauma that you see in the photographs of this presentation with the boarding schools and all of the trauma that all of these young people went through, like she just expressed, there one day, not there the next. Pushed down a hole, never seen again. That's trauma. There's several ways you can deal with trauma. You can fight or you can flee, and fight isn't actually attacking another person. It's attacking what's causing the problem. Or you can flee, which is to shut down and not express anything because you don't want it to continue to traumatize you. So if you look at the depth of the trauma that the Indigenous people have suffered through boarding schools, these people who came back after being spending a good part of their life up to that point on not expressing yourself, that's suppressing your ability to communicate, so you don't have any communication skills. So how do you live with that upon your way of life? You cannot express yourself. You carry it, you stuff it, you hide it, and now we're talking about, well, let's open this all back up again, this wound. And we're talking to the survivors of that. And also in this trauma that I'm talking about, you learn to, first of all, that you were a victim to it. Second of all, you become a survivor to it. But you're allowing the trauma to identify who you are as a human being rather than becoming a warrior. And warrior is not a gender thing. Warrior is taking care of your people and being a tribal people to make sure that they're protected and taken care of. They lost those abilities through boarding schools. People don't look at the bigger impact of what was being placed upon them. And this, you know, when your words of Christianity or whatever you choose to use, it's religion versus spirituality that we're talking about. As a spiritual people, the Indigenous peoples, our connection to Mother Earth, where we came from, was how we learned what life was really all about, because there was harmony in it, there was unity in it, there was peace in it, and there was balance in it. And we had that connection. There was a direct attempt to stop that. You know, we can attack these Native Americans, but they're not responding in the way that we normally can control people. Why can't we control them that way? So they didn't know how to deal with that spirituality. So I look back over, you know, not one time did my mother or I didn't get to know my father very well. Every time I seen him, he was broken. And it rips my heart out, those memories as a young child seeing. It wasn't that I was happy, not happy to see my father. I didn't see the happiness in him that he wanted to show everybody who his children were, because they were already separated, my mother and father. All I ever seen in him was the hurt in his eyes, the brokenness and the trauma from that life. And my mother never talked about those things to us.
And you mentioned that she had run away from a Riverside boarding school in Southern California.
Yes.
And made her way all the way back to Chiloquin with two other girls because she was also being abused.
Yes. And they hitchhiked all the way back and made it back to Chiloquin and never went back down again.
And never talked about it?
Never talked about it to our family. I found out from one of the people she hitchhiked back in the mid-90s, I was talking to her before she passed away, but she shared with me about why she was so close to me and had taken care of me when I was younger and these things. But
well, regarding the sharing of this information, you know, you get very emotional, Abby, when you talk, and yet you've done it 20 times, but it's pretty tough to talk about and emotional. What do you want to accomplish in the future now? And where do you want to take this? What does the general public need to know?
I think the general public needs to know that it happened. I think more so now than ever, we're learning to question what we see and what we think to be true. And I think it just makes you a critical thinker when you're like, you know what, I attended high school history, I've taken, you know, I'm informed on the world around me. How could I not know this history? And it makes people question that. And once you start questioning things, you become a more conscientious observer of the world around you. And so one, I want people to question things. Two, I want this to be recognized. You know, my dad, what he said after we watched this, presentation, he said they can never say they didn't know again. And I think a lot of people hide behind that ignorance. Well, I didn't know. Whereas natives, you know, we hold this distrust because we do know what happened. And so I want people to acknowledge that. And I think only through truth and reconciliation and acknowledgement can healing come. When you keep having your truth denied and, oh, that's not true, or, oh, it wasn't that bad, or that didn't happen, it's just like a punch to the stomach every single time. And so to have that acknowledged. And then I also think it's important to have these children brought back home in the hopes, not that it just makes us all sad and we cry, but in the hopes that we can heal and move forward. I think that's really important. You know, I saw some researchers talking about Charlie, and they were talking about him in an academic way, like he was just a statistic. And I got really...
Charlie being the...
Charlie Feister, the 12-year-old who was shot and killed. And I got really angry, and I didn't know why. And it's because he's, you know, he's not my cousin, but he's our Salmucs. He's our tribesman. He's our family to some extent. And to have him kind of commoditized was hurtful to me. And I said, if I can ever tell Charlie's stories without crying, then I'll stop telling it because it won't mean as much. Maybe that will mean I'm finally healed, and that would be a wonderful place to be in. But it means something to us. You know, I feel that we need to fix the things that are within our power to fix. And there's so much that we can't control. But if we can... We know that he was running away from the school. He ran away four times. We assume that he was trying to get back home. And if we can do that for him, it's a big deal to be able to kind of honor his last wish of what he was trying to do. And to know the harm that these schools caused to our community as a whole, and to come together and acknowledge that and hopefully heal from it and move forward, I would hope would be a healing thing for the community as a whole. And just, I think that's kind of my end goal, is to talk to a room of people who, I mean, the presentation I gave today, their whole goal is lifelong learning. And they didn't know this happened. They know things. You know, and for them to walk in and be like, geez, I thought I knew stuff and I didn't know that happened. What else don't you know? You know, when are you going to start recognizing that things have been covered up and there's a reason you don't know things, and then take the initiative to learn? I think that's important. And I also think it's important for our generations, you know, our young people to know, like my husband's Middle Eastern, and they have this really small space cushion and they give people hugs and they, you know, you greet by hugging and giving each other kisses. And I'm like, you're in my bubble. I have a very big bubble, but that's because I was raised in a native community and we're not touchy-feely. Does that mean we don't love each other? No, we express it through like teasing and laughing. That doesn't make us wrong or bad, but it explains, you know, it explains why our bubbles are bigger, why we interact the way we do, why we distrust. It's not because we're all angry, mean, and mad. Some of us are, but we've learned to distrust education, you know? Are you going to trust a teacher that says, oh, they did this, when you're somebody else is saying, no, they didn't do that. Yeah, you're going to, and that extends. It doesn't just go into the education system. Like I did a presentation about the healthcare system. That distrust is there. You know, Native women were sterilized without their knowledge. You think people are going to trust you when you say you have to take this vaccine? I remember Councilwoman Rosemary Treetop, when we were having the vaccine mandate discussion, said, remember the blankets. And that was the smallpox blankets that were intentionally given to Native people to kill them. You have to know your history to make decisions in your present. I'm not saying it should define the context, but you need to be knowledgeable about what's happened.
With that said, is this going to be taught in high schools?
One would hope. That's the whole reason. I wrote this specific lesson, one, because I want everybody to be aware of it and know this happened. And two, because I want our Native students to know the strength and the resilience that they come from. They can all hear about how poor me and we're a victim, but they need to dive into the resilience and the strength of the culture. Because that narrative of victimization, it's not that we haven't been victimized, because we have. But you need to hold pride in where you come from. I always say that a lack of history, and you know, I attended Chelequin High School and we learned no Native history. And it impacts the way you view yourself, the way you view your tribe, the way you view your community, and the way you view yourself in the world. And to have your history recognized and taught by somebody in a position of authority, such as an institution or a teacher, it shows you that you have value. Whereas the not having it taught shows that you don't have value. And so I think that's the whole goal behind Senate Bill 13, is to show not only are these the original stewards of this land and this is their history, but we need to acknowledge it so that everybody that's here knows it, and so that our Native students know this is where you come from. And when you have that foundation to build from of pride, where, you know, my generation started to find it. The generation now has that Native pride. But generations before, that Native pride was literally beat out of them in these schools. And so to give that pride of culture and place and that understanding of where you're at back to Native people, I think is very empowering.
Well, thank you both for joining me with this discussion. It's difficult for you, but at the same time helpful in the healing process and to inform not only your fellow tribal members, but the general public.
It is very emotional to me sitting through the presentation today, because the lack of knowledge of who we are and what we've been through as a people. Our people today, our tribe today, they know they're Native, but they don't know what Native is. Native is tribal. It was our responsibility to take care of one another and to lift one another up. We just came out of a pandemic, funeral after funeral after funeral after. How do we do this? How do we honor them? What do we do? What was our tradition? what was our culture? When we're talking about that circle, are we embracing everyone and bringing them closer to us, or is there no trust or hope and pushing everybody away so that they can't hurt me? Tribal government, do our people really embrace bureaucracy, or is there a lack of trust or that with what's happened to our people through termination? I believe boarding school was far more damaging to our native people within the Klamath tribes than anything else ever was, including termination, because it didn't give us the opportunity to express our voice. We were suppressed, and we were not only oppressed but suppressed. And with that suppression of not being able to express who you are, what's our purpose in life then? We can't be who we are because we can't talk about it.
Well, thank you, Romaine, and thank you again, Abby.
Thanks. I will say that OPB is doing an hour-long documentary on this. And, you know, the Modoc War documentary got over 600,000 views. And so if we just got 300,000 views, that's 300,000 people that can no longer say, I didn't know, or that tribal people who can know this history and be proud of that we're survivors. You know, we're the descendants of those who survived.